Eska had told me I could learn much from her about the whole ambience out of which Arago grew. He was right. In 228, her living room on the floor above the dungeon restaurant, she talked unstintingly about what had happened to her own outlook in the decade she had lived in Brazil. "The whole exotic side of Arago and his work is going to make you very confused, TM," she said, "unless you understand the basic belief under it all, that reincarnation is a fact, that the law of life is eternal evolution from one cellular creature to the galaxies, TM." She had been a specialist in the dualistic heresies of the Middle East, in which good and evil are viewed as equal adversaries. It took a long time for me to understand that this dualistic conception was a heresy, Infecta TM, she said. I am now convinced, from arduous study and long reflection, that a human being is a creature who continues to evolve indefinitely, that he sheds lives as he sheds clothes, and that the essential part of him continues. Once you are able to believe that, the whole thing becomes clear, especially in trying to understand Brazil. When a person dies, it is simply the shedding of a few atoms. We know from Lord Rutherford that atoms are principally empty space, anyway. You see, the phenomenon of reincarnation was turned into a coherent philosophy by Allan Kardec. I spent 8 years in Brazil before I had any interest in this whatever. And although Brazil is mostly Catholic, TMLO find that 80% of them, when they are really in a pinch, off they go to consult a medium of some sort, of TM. She went on, you can look at a medium in two ways. Either he or she is a super multiple schizo, or you begin to accept possession. You have an absolutely tumultuous interchange with what we call reality, what our eyes can see, and with what the Kardecists regard as spirits. Actually, this doctrine is superlatively Christian when you think about it. The followers of Kardec regard God as an immensely powerful accountant or computer. Its memory banks are infinite. You simply cannot get away with anything, so that whatever you do that is malicious or harmful in this life, TMLL pay the bill sooner or later, today or tomorrow, TM. When I tried to steer her more on course, to relate this to Arago, she said, TMLL get to that. But to understand, 229, Arago, TMS good to understand some of this. The different levels of spiritist belief in Brazil are simply manifestations of the same thing, depending on the scope and mind of the person involved. People who are more intelligent, who don't TMT need the ritual of Umbanda and Quimbanda, become Kardecists. Arago was amazing because he cut right across the entire spectrum. He was a god of the most important people in Brazil, as well as the poor and needy. I knew personally the wife of the director of the largest German mining combine, with enormous interests in Brazil. She was miraculously cured, after being given up as hopeless by the best doctors in Europe and America. But Arago was only one, perhaps the greatest, because he could be so clearly confirmed as the only one of hundreds of others here in Brazil who work in spiritist hospitals, and achieve at least part of the success Arago reached, TM. I went with Jerry Canigan to an Umbanda meeting that night. It was far out in the country, in a little tile-roofed house that was totally dark as we approached it over bumpy ruts, far off the main road. We stumbled along a twisting path, tapped on the door, and entered. It was hard to see in the large room, in spite of the candles flickering on a wide table at the opposite end. There must have been about 50 Brazilians, apparently farmers and their wives, and children, sitting on wooden benches along the plaster walls. In the center of the room, a tall, handsome black man in a white robe was pacing back and forth, alternately chanting and speaking in Portuguese, which I could not understand. On the table that served as an altar were figurines of many Catholic saints, but, surprisingly, mixed in among them were an old black Sambo type of thing, and what seemed to be some African totems. The men and women sat separately. On chairs in the center of the room were two women, dressed in white, their heads slumped on their chests, arms drooped to their sides, obviously in a trance. After more chanting, the congregation spontaneously burst into a hymn in Portuguese, which sounded for all the world like those sung in any Presbyterian or Methodist, 230, church in the States. The leader led the group, his eyes tightly closed, interspersing sermon-like phrases between the stanzas. Then he moved to the altar and took down a lantern sort of device, similar to the incense carrier used in Catholic and Greek Orthodox services. He lit a black powdery incense in the lantern, and swung it precariously around the room. There was no ventilation, and the smoke filled the room like a sudden fog rising on a mountain road. The leader moved along the benches, waving the lantern and continuing to chant. As he approached, each person stood up and received a generous bath of the smoke, turning around in a circle to receive it. Following suit, I stood up too, turned a circle, fought back from coughing, and sat down again. After the ritual was finished, the two women seated in the center of the room came to life. Although their eyes were still closed, their heads still drooped. They began by snapping their fingers, then shuddering, then chanting, beating their feet on the stone floor all the while. Women and children came up to them, and as they filed by, the women ran their hands down the sides of their bodies, as if to sweep off any evil spirits that might be lingering. When the women were finished, the men came up to the leader, now seated in the center in a third chair, and the ritual was repeated. On the way back to Aro Preto, Jerry Kanigan said to me, "You see, this is what Arago was not. He used no ritual whatever, except for his preliminary prayers. Yet he was very close to these people in his artless, unaffected way. They have not shut themselves off from the springs of primeval origin. They are not encased in the cement overcoats we who are civilized surround ourselves with. I think we have much to learn from Thema T.M. Vi." I met with Jerry Kanigan once more, this time in Belo Horizonte. She had urged me to go with her to see a spiritual prophet of wide renown, who lived on the outskirts of the city, and whose fame had spread throughout Brazil. He was blind, and he must have been well into his 231-80s. When we arrived at his modest house, he was sitting on the porch, his large, veined hands folded on the top of his cane. His name was Enrique Franco. He claimed to be a distant relative of the Spanish dictator, but held no love for him. Jerry had never met him before. She explained that I was an American journalist interested in Brazil and exploring the background surrounding Arrigo. He said there were dozens of Arrigos in Brazil, but none had Arrigo a TMS capacity for demonstrating the truth of the spiritual world so graphically and so incontestably. He insisted that we all had spirit guides, but that we do not listen and do not believe. Not all are good, however, and we must feel them out with discernment. He said that the reason doctors are amazed at some of the cures Arrigo brought about is that they fail to recognize that there are no illnesses, there are only the ill. "We come from mud on the way to go to TM," he said, emphasizing that we constantly evolve through many reincarnations. Our suffering is the lapidation of the spirit. Life after death is the same as it is on Earth. You have the same structure on a different molecular plane, TM. In contrast to Enrique Franco, the attitude of H.V. Walter was of a different sort. I found him in his British consulate office in Belo Horizonte, relaxed and jolly as usual. He had been in the Foreign Service in Brazil for over a quarter of a century, and seemed to thrive on it. In his late 60s, he was dressed in a suit that must have come from one of the better London tailors, yet he loosened his tie and leaned back in his chair, and welcomed the chance to talk about Arrigo. He was absolutely the most wonderful phenomenon of modern times, TM, Walter said. You see, hardly anyone thought of going to him until every doctor he knew had given him up. That a TMS where Arrigo a TMS value came in, and why his cures were so dramatic. I followed the case of Dr. Cruz, a TMS sister. An absolute miracle. TMM going to take you downstairs to his office, and let him tell you about it firsthand. Both her father and her brother were fine doctors, very fine. Carlos Cruz himself is a dentist, and a graduate of the University 232, of Brazil. They knew their professions, And they knew that Arago had done what they could never do. I knew about Cuba Chicoutimi's daughter, and many other leading diplomats and statesmen who have confided in me about their own cures. I don't yet TMT go in for any of the mystical stuff. I'm a pragmatist, arealist. What happened in Arago TMS case, happened. It TMS not to be believed but it has to be TM. Walter took me downstairs to Dr. Cruz at TMS office. It was jammed with people waiting, and a woman was in the chair. As soon as the consul explained to him that I was in Brazil from the States to do a story on Arago, Dr. Cruz left his patient open-mouthed in the chair and took us out to the corridor. He talked for 15 minutes about Arago, confirming everything that Walter had said, and claiming that the time wasted in the legal proceedings against Arago had been an international tragedy. If Arago had been placed in a university for scientific study instead of being prosecuted, Cruz said, we might have made major advances in medicine and surgery. To get a North American point of view, I dropped by the United States Information Service office in Billow, first to touch base with compatriots after such a long absence, and second to see what the attitude toward Arago was in these purlieus. There was the same confirmation, attested to either directly or indirectly by many of the staff, both American and Brazilian. Back in the States, I reviewed my research and fattened it with additional interviews with Belk, Puharich, Lawrence, Cortes, and other members of the medical team of the Congonhas expedition. They were most helpful, especially because my mind was so full of what I had absorbed in Brazil that it needed better focus. There were many new facets opening up in the study of the paranormal that they were all interested in exploring. As for me, it was all I could do to catch up on Arago. Puharich had discovered Uri Geller, the Israeli phenomenon who promised to go far beyond Arago in the realm of clairvoyance, psychokinesis, and other aspects of extrasensory perception. I had all I could handle in trying to reckon 233, struck the Arago story. Whatever else there was beyond that would be too mind-blowing for a journalist to contemplate. Without ever having seen the man, Arago became real to me from the meticulous research and in writing these pages. I hope the reader will be able to sense some of this in the book. 234, Afterword, by Henry K. Puharich, M.D. I want to present a personal interpretation of what Arago means to me. To understand that, one has to have a feeling for what it must have been like to be Ainsa Dia T.M. of Arago. Later TMS begin at an elementary level, namely, the feel of Arago TMS hand while doing surgery. If you take an ordinary butter knife and gently run the edge across your skin, you get an idea of how this knife feels in the hand that moves it. You will notice that there is a gradation of pressure that can be applied, and that applying this pressure gives you a feeling of frictional forces, resistance of the tissues to being cut, control of the movement of the knife, and so on. You could learn all these nuances of the feel of a sharp knife by maneuvering it over other materials, such as foods used in your kitchen. In short, you would learn what every surgeon learns at the feel in an ear TMS hand of a knife against tissue. Now I thoroughly knew this feel of a knife in my hand when it was used in surgery, a human or animal. One day when I was standing beside Arago in his Congonhas clinic, he asked a patient to stand against the wall, a man of 45 years. Altimiro, Arago TMS assistant, handed a sharp, stainless steel kitchen knife with a 4-inch blade to Arago. Arago grabbed my right hand, thrust the knife into it, and closed his hand around my hand, so that the knife was doubly enclosed. Then he led my right hand toward the eyeball of the patient and ordered me to put the knife in the eye socket. I followed his orders and plunged the knife between the eyeball and the upper lid. As I did so, my right hand went limp. I could not proceed. I feared that I would slash the eyeball and do permanent damage. Arago again grabbed my right hand and said, "Hey, go ahead. Do it like a man." ATM, this order gave me the courage I needed. My fears 235, vanished, as I plunged the knife deeply into the eye socket. Now I was in complete control of myself. As I moved the knife into the depths of the eye socket, I was amazed to discover that the tip of the knife had none of the familiar feel that a knife has against tissue. To give you the complete feeling of what my hand felt, do the following exercise. Take a pair of magnets and find the like poles of each. Then hold one magnet in each hand and bring the like poles toward each other. You will now experience repulsive forces between the two like magnetic poles, and these will be felt in your hands. This is a totally different sensation from that which you experienced with the butter knife against your skin. Now when I moved the knife into the tissues of the eyeball and the eye socket, I felt a repulsive force between the tissues and the knife. No matter how hard I pressed in, there was an equal and opposite force acting on my knife to prevent it from touching the tissues. This repulsive force was the secret of why no one felt pain when Arrigo did his famous AI checkup at TM. My patient did not feel any pain from my knife manipulations, either. It is obvious to me that Arrigo could control that repulsive force, so that he could go ahead and cut tissue. And this, of course, should cause pain. But it is known that Arrigo did not cause pain. I have observed, and so have others, that Arrigo could cut tissues without using the sharp edge of a knife. Often he would cut using the dull edge of the knife. He has been known, when in a hurry, to cut tissues without a knife. In these rare instances, he would use his hands and fingers to go through tissue. It is my opinion that the actual cutting agency was the repulsive force, and not the knife or his fingers. I have no idea as to the nature of this repulsive force. But from electrical field measurements I carried out on Arrigo, EEG, EKG, and GSR, I do not believe that this repulsive force is in the electromagnetic spectrum. I believe it is an unknown form of life energy. In September of 1967 I went to Brazil to continue my studies of Arrigo. I had seen him many times since that LIPOMO operation in 1963. And it had never occurred to me 236, to ask for help for myself. One day as I was working with Arrigo, he suddenly turned to me and said, "You have atosclerosis or TM. I replied, "I don't yet TMT know about that, but I have a chronic infection and drainage in my left ear from a colostitum or TM. Arrigo said, "Yes, you have had that for a long time, but the atosclerosis is new. Check it when you get home. I will give you a prescription that will cure both of your problems at TM. In 30 seconds he had finished the following prescription, Paradoctor Buharich. There is not much need to explain the items in the first treatment except to state that the first drug was an eardrop solution, the second was bile salts, and the third, Gabromycina, was a primitive form of streptomycin that had largely been dropped from use by physicians. When I returned to the United States, I had the audiologist in my own laboratory run a hearing test on me with an audiometer. When the test was done, she volunteered the diagnosis, "You have atosclerosis or TM. I checked the audio 237 grams, Arrigo was right. I did have atosclerosis, a hardening of the tissue over the small bones of the ear. I decided then and there to start Arrigo a TMS prescription. Because of my odd working hours, it was easiest for me to give myself the injections just before I went to bed each night. I started the first treatment series on October 7, 1967. This meant that I gave myself the injection of the gabromycina once a day. By the 14th of October I had developed a reaction to this form of streptomycin. I had a swelling and tenderness in my hands and palms and in my feet and toes. Therefore I had to stop the injections and wait for the allergic reaction to disappear. By the 25th of October I was in good enough shape to begin the second treatment. I finished the second treatment on January 11, 1968. I was free of the ear drainage problem that had plagued me all my life, and have continued to be so to this day. Over the next 6 months my audiograms showed that my atosclerosis had disappeared, and my hearing improved. On January 11, 1971, I was working in my office at Intelectron Corporation in New York City when the telephone rang. I answered it, and a young woman whose name I don't yet TMT now recall blurted out the following, Hey, I am looking for Dr. Puharicha T.M. I replied, ah, this is he speaking a T.M. Hey, Dr. Puharich, I just got a telephone call from a TV station in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, asking for you to comment on the death of Arrigo T.M. Hey, would you please repeat that? I don't yet TMT think I clearly heard what you say the TM, I stuttered. She repeated her statement. I said, A, are you sure of what you are saying, A, that Arrigo is dead? ATM, she replied to the effect that all she knew was what had been relayed to her. I told her that I could not reply because of my shocked state. I sat back in my chair. It was not possible for Arrigo, the greatest healer in the world, to be dead. He was too young, too vital. Besides, he was the hope of thousands, perhaps millions of people who looked to him as the witness to higher powers. There must be a mistake, I thought. I had to 238, check this out myself. I called friends in Brazil, who confirmed the dread news that Arrigo had been killed in an auto accident. I was personally despondent. The loss of Arrigo to me was as though the sun had gone out, the planet Earth and humanity had lost their great luminary. I had suddenly become impoverished. The shock was so deep to me that I decided to go on a 14-day fast and re-examine all my life, to weigh the meaning of Arrigo, in life and in death. Near the end of my fast, I came to some strong personal conclusions. The first was that I had failed both Arrigo and humanity by not completing my studies of Arrigo TMS healing work. I now realized that I should have dropped my other work in 1963 and concentrated all my efforts on him. I was sure there would never be another Arrigo in my lifetime. But if there was, I would not fail the next time. I looked back over the 10 years since I had moved to New York from California. I had become a slave to my company, to my inventions, and to a complex, costly way of life. While it was true that I had been issued some 50 patents for my inventions which promised to help people with deafness, I could not really make any more creative contributions in this area. Others would carry on what I had started. But most of all, I wanted to get into the full-time study of the mysterious powers of the human mind. One day I made my decision. I would resign from all my duties and jobs with foundations, companies, and laboratories, and give myself 2 years to find a place in full-time psychical research. When I informed my family and colleagues of my decision, they groaned and tried to talk me out of it. By April 1, 1971, I had freed myself of all my professional ties and begun my new way of life. I had two goals. One was to develop a theoretical base for my research, the other was to find human beings with great talents who would cooperate as research subjects. With respect to the first, I spent 2 months pulling together all my ideas into the A Theory of Protocommunication ATM, which I was to present at an international parapsychology conference in France in August 1971. 239. I had made contact with the startling psychic capacities of an Israeli, Yuri Geller, by letter, and he agreed to see me in Israel the week before the conference and give me an opportunity to test his alleged talents. The result of this meeting was that I spent the next 2 years in an intensive study of this 25-year-old man at TMS powers. Yuri Geller proved to have power over inorganic things equivalent to what Arrigo had over organic and living things. He was able to concentrate on metals and cause them to bend and split. He could repair complex devices like watches and computers. He could make objects disappear and reappear, and even translocate them over distances of thousands of miles. The probe for the source and nature of these powers has been fully covered in my book Yuri, Doubleday, 1974. There are also other details about Arrigo given in that book, details which John Fuller would have no way of documenting firsthand as he has carefully done in this one. Today there is a Yuri Geller. I am sure there will be other Arrigos. It is up to mankind to cease and desist from persecuting these messengers from the higher powers of the universe and to learn the truth from them. November 2, 1973. The end of extract.